Hello, this is your host, Dr. Casey Bradley, and you're listening to the Real P3 Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the pork professionals around the world, and it's brought to you by the Sun Swine Group and Swine Nutrition Management.
Hello, and welcome to our special podcast series on sustainability in agriculture. I'm your host, Dr. Casey Bradley, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Mitch Rowland. We're thrilled to have a very special guest with us, Andrew Campbell, all the way from Ontario, Canada. Andrew is not just a farmer. He's an award-winning communicator and a passionate advocate for the farming community. Alongside his family, Andrew skillfully manages a diverse farming operation in southern Ontario's Middlesex County, where they milk cows and cultivate crops like corn, soybeans, wheat, and hay. But Andrew's impact extends far beyond his fields. He's a prominent voice in mainstream media and conference halls, and he's prolific online, tirelessly promoting the positive stories that farmers across Canada have to share. His efforts have earned him accolades as a leader in innovation, champion, game changer, and a top agriculture influencer. Through his written work, photographs, videos, and podcasts, Andrews has become a key figure in shaping the narrative around farming and agriculture. Today, we're diving into a vital conversation about communicating our story in agriculture. Andrew, with his vast experience and unique perspective, is the perfect guest to kick off this series. So let's get started and explore how we can effectively share the sustainable, innovative, and heartfelt stories that define our agricultural community. Welcome, Andrew.
Well, exciting to have a different lineup and a different structure to the Real P3 podcast. I am Casey Bradley, your host, and we have Andrew Campbell as our guest. But now I have a co-host, and I'm going to turn that over to Mitch Rowland.
Thanks, Casey. It's an honor to be able to host some of these podcasts. And our guest today, Andrew Campbell, he and I met at the Arkansas Nutrition Conference this year. He was giving a talk on communicating in agriculture and addressing some of the problems that we face from a communication standpoint. So with that, I'll let Mr. Campbell introduce himself and tell us a little bit about Fresh Air Media and what all he does.
Sure. Well, it's great to be here. I appreciate the invitation, Mitch and Casey. It's exciting to be able to talk about this. I know, Mitch, you mentioned the Arkansas Nutrition Conference. And so it was one of those exciting opportunities to kind of bring a couple of passions that I certainly have forward. So a little bit about me and kind of where those come from. So we're coming live from my farm office here in southern Ontario, Canada. Here we milk cows, we grow corn, soybeans, wheat, hay. So we've got kind of the two side farm businesses that, being on the dairy side and on the grain side. On the dairy side, we do that with my wife and kids and my parents. We've got robots that help us milk cows. I shouldn't say help us. They do the milking of the cows nowadays. We just kind of help keep things functional around here nowadays. So it's kind of an exciting time for us to be able to, focus a lot on, cow health and cow comfort and all of those types of things. Then on the grain side, I do that with my brother and his wife. And so we, work back and forth between a number of different farms in the area. And then the other side of my life is the Fresh Air Media side. And that's where it's a communications company where we work with groups and organizations, a lot here in Canada, some in the US as well. Just focusing on how can we support and help, teams with their own communication needs, whether that be in creating content, creating strategy, creating, helping support projects, just do things that we find fun is really what we're trying to do because, for us, the farm business is the priority just because, naturally a farm business is that way. But my background, which actually is in journalism, is could not be left alone. I couldn't quite leave that communication side alone. I love asking questions and telling stories and trying to find ways to connect with audiences. It's just like something in me loves doing that as well. And doing that within the agriculture space, which is so misunderstood, I think just is just a fun challenge for me on a day-to-day basis. So that's kind of what, you know, any day looks like for me. It's, you know, maybe in a tractor on a conference call with, you know, some marketing team at the same time is generally how I roll day to day.
Well, I love it. It doesn't sound much different than my life. Some days, you know, I'm on a pig farm or a rabbit farm, and then I have to squeeze in that conference call, you know, on my car or in the barn. And yeah, so it's very similar life. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. And I get a kick out of here. I'm in my barn office, so the background isn't nearly as exciting, as I love the reaction of people when I'm either out in the barn around cows on a video call. They get a kick out of that. Or from the tractor cab where things are happening all around. I get a kick out of seeing people's because it goes to, and you'll find this too, Casey, is that it goes to a lot of people, even if they're working in agriculture, don't see and experience that the same way on a day-to-day basis. You know, sort of bring a little bit of that into people's day kind of brightens it up and reminds me very much that people are interested in this kind of stuff that we talk about on a day-to-day basis. It's maybe not their number one priority, but it does allow opportunity that we have exciting things we're doing day-to-day that we can share and that people are interested in hearing about.
Well, thanks for that introduction. And it sounds like you got a lot going on and every day is different and exciting for you. So I want to take a step back to the Arkansas Nutrition Conference where we met. You gave a talk that was titled, "Why All the Science in the World Won't Matter If People Feel Bad." So can you tell us a little bit from your experience, what makes people feel bad about agriculture?
That's a big first question, Mitch, because there is a lot to unpack. Yes. So let's spend the entire episode on one question. No, not quite. It is one of those things. So if I back up, you know, in my story, if I back up, and this kind of brings us to where this conversation really is in my mind, Mitch. If I back up, I said my, you know, career kind of started in journalism. So I grew up on this farm, you know, decided that I was going to be, you know, the big newsman of Canada, and went to school for journalism. And that's what I wanted to do, was kind of, you know, anchor the evening news when everybody watched evening news. And it was one of those things that's kind of where I started. Realized pretty quickly that urban life, living in the city where, you know, that's kind of the core of a lot of those jobs are, wasn't for me. And I realized that in my first job when I moved to a town of 2,000 people. Town life for 2,000 people wasn't for me. So therefore, the city definitely was not going to be for me. And so I came back to the farm. But I had a lot of connections with people off the farm from that experience through journalism. And as I came and, you know, was kind of just sharing just random things that were going on a day-to-day basis before I really was trying to do that, recognized pretty quickly, you know, and this is not yesterday anymore, you know, recognized pretty quickly just what that disconnect really was like. And we were moving into an era then where social media was at the core of how a lot of people got their information or were starting to get their information. When I went through journalism school, that was not, we weren't worried about updating the website. We weren't worried about, you know, making Facebook posts to reach audiences. We were focused core, like absolute at the core was just get it on air. And so as that changed, realized that people were getting more and more of this information online. They were getting it from different sources than were traditional. And it really changed, I think, a lot for our industry in terms of how people saw us and where they got their information and who they got it from. So all of a sudden, you know, those big activist videos or, you know, those, you know, top 10 toxic things you can eat lists or all the things that have an impact on how people eat and how people see food production, you know, changed very, very quickly for us, and started to have an impact then on, you know, what does Walmart put on their shelf and what does McDonald's put on their menu and what does a legislator put through in bills to impact people just because of how people feel. And so when we do talk about, you know, that if people feel bad, it's kind of this recognition of, well, if people all of a sudden feel bad about how a pig is treated, if people feel guilty, you know, in my line here in the dairy farm about how a dairy cow is treated, if people feel scared about antibiotic use or pesticide use, or like we can talk for days about the spectrum of things we do in the industry, but if any of it makes them feel bad or makes them feel, sorry, scared or makes them feel guilty, like people eventually change their buying habits because of that. People don't want to sit down at their dinner table and feel guilty about what they're eating, or feel guilty about what they're putting in their kids' lunches. If they feel that too often, they will change their buying habit. So in the context of the nutrition conference, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, all this great science that's happening in the industry in terms of, you know, improving efficiency, improving meat quality, improving tenderness, improving animal care, improving, like, we're not putting these things, we're not feeding these animals things that are harming them. That's just not what we're doing. But if people have this perception that somehow it is bad, then they're just not going to buy that product. And then it doesn't really matter what the science says in what it helps. If they feel bad, they're not going to buy it and we're not going to be able to use it. So it is one of those things that we as an industry, whether it's nutrition, whether it's anything else in ag, we have to be very, very mindful of how a consumer perceives what we're doing as an industry so that we can continue to deliver what we think is then best in terms of care, comfort, production.
Great. And I think, you know, from recent experiences, one of the words that kind of, you know, may make a few people cringe is the word feed additive. And, you know, it has gotten that negative connotation, but it could mean a range of things. It could mean a probiotic or a prebiotic or digestive enzyme. And so, you know, how we communicate what the actual definition of a additive is rather than some chemical that has gotten some negative press, I think is one of the more important things that we need to do in our industry to really talk about what we're giving animals and why we're giving it to them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because when you talk about that word additive, like we don't even have to be in the animal care space, we can just be in human nutrition space. We've heard lots of stories over the last decade of this additive or that additive in, you know, whatever food product is on a grocery store shelves, and people have this kind of cringe moment about it because somewhere somebody along the line says this is bad and used the word additive along with the word bad all the time. So it adds that negative connotation to it. So yeah, so when they think it's bad for themselves to have this food additive, then they're just not going to think it's great for an animal either.
So where do you think we've gone wrong, or how do you think we can improve as an industry in handling some of this negative feedback that may not have merit or scientific basis on the claims or beliefs that some consumers or activist groups may have or be putting out there?
Yeah, so like I wouldn't necessarily use the word wrong, because I think the challenge is in this space, as I talked about, you know, a lot of this has come within the last 15 years, I think, 10 to 15 years. And communicator has never been in the repertoire of what a farmer has had to do. You know, if I think of the farmers in my life, my dad's a great example. He's not a farmer because he loves dealing with people. In fact, he's a farmer because he doesn't really like dealing with people. He'd much rather deal with animals. Like, that's what most farmers, you know, are doing, right? Like, that's just the reality of it. And so, you know, the communication piece is really, you know, we can fit, you know, that vet and mechanic and financial advisor and all these types of hats that we always talk about people in the industry having to wear. Communicator just hasn't been one. So to be able to, so the fact that we haven't done that, I don't necessarily think it's wrong. It's just a new trait that we've kind of have to start getting comfortable with. And the other side of that is honestly, you know, you mentioned the activist side, and that really is probably one of those big challenges that, you know, we can't just snap our fingers and overcome because, you know, they are well funded, they're well organized, they're very great at making emotional connections with the stories they're trying to share, whether they're entirely factual or not is, you know, to be determined, you know, but frankly, they are very good at their jobs. And their job is to, you know, basically take what we're doing, you know, particularly in animal agriculture and like making it look bad to everybody else in order to change people's habits. That's really what their job is. And they're very good at doing it. So I think there's a couple of things that we can do differently. One is, you know, add communicator to our title, I think is an important one in that, you know, are there opportunities that we're missing to reach out to people? It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, big and splashy or anything like that. But, you know, it's one of those things that if, you know, people want to come tour a farm or have you talk to a class or, you know, you're just talking one-on-one with person, you know, at church or at a community event or whatever it happens to be, you know, I think that's important to look back and say to yourself, okay, what are some of those myths, questions that people do, you know, does come up in conversation. For me, if I think of some of those conversations, you know, people will ask things all the time or say statements. And I say to myself, oh, do I really want to have this conversation with this person? Like, we've all had those, right? We all know what those are. The reality is, yeah, sometimes we do have to have those conversations. It's not about me teaching you something and me being right and you being wrong. That's not the approach to take. But about this, you know, curiosity. Where do you hear that? What do you know about it? What do I do on my farm? Or what have I seen in my industry that maybe counter some of that? We have to take a bit of that responsibility on ourselves. And then the other side of that is, even if you aren't interested in doing that, which is totally fine, because not everybody is up for having those conversations. I would never say, if you hate doing them, go out and do them anyway. I don't think that's the right answer. But I think, what else can you do instead? There's lots of organizations, you know, that exist. A lot of campaigns that are going on, a lot of things that require funding. So is it an opportunity that, okay, you don't want to do that? Find an organization that does and write them a check. Because if we look at what activist organizations are running with, they're running with, some of these groups are running with $100+ million budgets annually. You know, and I look at some of the agriculture advocacy groups that exist, and they're lucky if they're hitting $5 million in funding. You know, we need to prioritize that, I think, is the other side. So that's really where I think there's three things to do. Is one, you know, let's communicate a little bit more, you know, even if it is in small opportunities. Two, if you don't want to do it, write a check. You know, that will, you know, kind of get you off the hook for a little while. You know, and three, recognize that activist organizations are not going away. We can't do anything to make them go away. This is just going to be our new reality.
I just want to step in for a second and say thank you for saying that, because I look at a lot of these people out there, like that's pro-ag and doing social media and doing the reels and the different Facebook things and just being, to me, almost obnoxious. And I'm like, do we need to communicate that way? And maybe their approach is helping in a different way. But I'm just like, do we want farmers to be seen as obnoxious? And or I see a lot of women in ag, oh, they're wearing makeup and they look so great out there scooping manure. And I'm like, that's not the reality. And so I think that's kind of important, bringing that up to where people, where I struggle. Yeah, I'd like to make videos and reels because that's just great to get your messaging out. But it's not pretty work all the time what we do.
Yeah. And I think it's important to have a wide spectrum, you know, in that space, in that, and that's where, you know, kind of each individual, you know, how they go about it, you know, kind of fits with what their comfort level is. You know, you talk about, you know, people, you know, if getting the reel done means you put on a clean shirt and do that because you definitely don't want to look at your worst when you do it, then I'm okay with that, because I think at least it's still getting done. At least there still is a message. But then I think it's also important to, okay, let's also share the story that maybe somebody else did in their own comfort level, you know, that maybe is realistic to them, that we don't just try to push kind of, you know, one silo of this is what it looks like all the time, about, you know, compiling and coordinating and using each other's messages all the time. Because I do think if you do look on social media, there is a pile of people out there sharing stories, doing a whole bunch of things, you know, online. And so I think it's important to be able to, you know, let's recognize them at the same time. I don't need to make fresh content all of the time for my own audience. Why don't I use somebody else's too, that, you know, maybe it's not exactly aligned with what I'm doing on my farm, but it's close enough because it matches what they're doing on their farm. And how can we kind of build each other up that way so that we can give, you know, a better impression of what actually is happening, you know, in and around the industry. I think I think it's important to be able to do, because it is, as I said before, like it is a comfort thing, and, you know, just not everybody's comfortable doing it all the time. So.
He brought up, activism has been brought up a couple times, right, in the conversation. And I was curious as to what your thoughts were to whether those groups or members of those groups truly believe or are wanting to improve society, or if there's an underlying agenda that they're using that face to push.
Oh, that question is going to get me in trouble, Mitch. Here's where I think it comes from. So it comes from a lot of different places for them as well, just like probably for us in the industry, you know, where we come from. I think for them, there are people involved in groups, doing demonstrations, you know, doing a whole lot of things that, like, deep down truly believe that this is bad, and I want to do something to change that. You know, they really do come at it from a place of wanting to do good. Does my belief system align with theirs? No. But it doesn't, I don't think it necessarily takes away from them just trying to do something good. Just like, you know, me and the things that I'm doing, you know, I believe in them. I want to put an effort in to make them better. I'm going to do things to try to make that happen. I think we probably have the same value system that way, in terms of, you know, getting out there and just, you know, taking action and responsibility for the things we have in our control. So I think there is a lot of people involved in those movements that do come at it from that place. And so, you know, I don't want to, you know, take them and say, you know, they're all awful, they're all mean, they're all anything like that, because it's just what they believe. And we have to accept that. That doesn't mean that everybody in the activism movement feels that way. I do believe that, you know, if we look at some of the largest activist organizations, you know, I mentioned before, you know, they've got big budgets, they've got staff, they've got, you know, they've got expectations that are met by a board of directors, you know, funding goals, they've got, they are running a business, frankly. You know, and they've got things that they need to meet, or else they won't be in that job anymore and somebody else will come in and take over. That's just the reality of those organizations. So I think, you know, for some of them, some of the tactics that they use, you know, not unlike a lot of political things too, you know, are meant to, how can we shock, awe, you know, create emotion from people to try to draw donations. That's what their business is. Their business is getting donations. And so I think that for some of those and some of the tactics they're using, yeah, those organizations may have started out as a place of, you know, somebody wanting to do good, but now have turned themselves into a business that have objectives and they have to be met, and they're going to do what they need to do in order to meet those objectives and get those contributions. You know, so do I believe everybody within an organization, you know, is just coming at it, you know, full from, you know, the bottom of their hearts and want to make a change? No, I don't believe that. But I do think there are people, particularly people who, you know, you might see in your own communities, you know, do come at it from a place of, you know, just really wanting to make a difference. It just aligns very, very differently from what I think making a difference looks like.
Oh, I mean, our business is kind of like that. We are, you know, we have a new client whose heart is in the right place, but kind of guiding him into what, you know, reality or abilities are and balancing that. And I think, you know, the activists get that noise, they get that attention, that shock and awe, but there's truly a lot of great people out there that you said, that one-on-one conversation we can have at a church event or a community event or at a lunch or at the grocery store is so beneficial, because those are the people that really matter. And I think we have to understand who we want to talk to, and we're never going to change that activist, but we can influence our other people. And I think that's just as important.
Yeah, I totally agree, Casey. And I think it's one of those where, you know, if I look at some of those conversations that we have and how I've changed my mentality towards going into those conversations, is a lot to do with, you know, we don't have to convince and convert everybody. Like, not everybody is going to agree with us 100% of the time. I think the example I used at that conference was, you know, if I go in to a conversation with my wife and tell her I'm right and she's wrong, get used to it. How do we think that conversation is going to go? Like, obviously it's not going to work. She is not going to say, oh yes, you're right, thank you for bringing this to my attention. She's going to be so mad that she is not going to hear one thing I say after that, right? Why do we think having conversations about, you know, food production work the same way? You know, us saying that we do it right and what you're doing is wrong, which, you know, tended to be my thought early on in this, that once I tell them how I do it, they're going to come around immediately and I'm going to be serving steak for dinner. Like, I just know it. And guess what? It never, ever worked. But having these more conversations where, okay, I want to hear from you. Like, what actually does concern you? Why have you made this decision? You know, where does a lot of that come from? Me genuinely interested, because honestly, I am interested in how people get to where they are today. And yeah, it might not align with me, but that's fine. That's where they get their values from. So being genuinely interested in them, usually, is reciprocated by them being genuinely interested in what I'm doing and thinking. And we have this very level-headed conversation. And then at the end of it, I'm not selling the farm because they've convinced me that dairy is bad. And they're not going out and now buying, you know, a gallon of milk, you know, every third day of the week because I've convinced them. But we all of a sudden have this like, oh, maybe I should look at how I'm producing that on my farm to make sure that care is at, you know, the forefront for me. And then they come back and say, oh, well, they weren't a bad guy. They have a lot of the same things that I'm interested in. They just do this instead. I think just brings the temperature down and over time maybe actually does have an impact in both how they think and how I think.
Great points.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think that that kind of wraps it up from our perspective, but we also want to give our speakers the opportunity to give any final thoughts that you may have or a question that you may have for us.
Well, so I'm not going to spend very much time on a final thought other than to say, kind of to reiterate the point, and I made this, you know, at the nutrition conference too, where we met Mitch, was just the recognition that as an industry, like this is the reality we're facing and it's not going away by burying our heads in the sand. We as an industry have to take responsibility for our own messaging and our own story. And waiting for somebody else to do that for us means we're going to be waiting a very, very long time. And we're probably going to be legislated, regulated, or told otherwise how to produce the product the best way they think versus the best way we think. And so we just have to recognize that that's a reality and kind of get at and prioritize occasionally, you know, the communication side and sharing these stories, you know, both within the industry and outside. So that's my final thought on that. I guess, you know, from my perspective, my question for you is, because I do see different dynamics. There's a lot of similarities between Canadian agriculture and American agriculture. You know, generally the American side is on a larger scale than what the Canadian side is, but there are some similarities, obviously, and you know, just the value chains go back and forth in terms of shipping products back and forth. You know, if we talk about pigs, you know, there's animals crossing the border all the time. You know, between, you know, they're very integrated that way. But I guess from your perspective, when we do talk about, you know, some of the big buyers, the Walmarts, the McDonald's, the, you know, the grocery stores, the restaurant chains, you know, of the world, I believe that they can have a tremendous impact moving forward on how we produce products, because if they snap their finger and demand something, we kind of have to follow. So my question to you is, what do you see as an issue for them moving forward that you think all of North America needs to be aware of? What do you think their priorities are going to be that you've seen and heard from, that we just need to be aware of? And do we need to change our story? Do we need to change our production practice? What do we need to do based on what their big concerns are?
Well, so I was, as you were asking that question, what was coming to mind was, you know, the pressure that they get from their consumers. And, you know, I obviously haven't been in a role that was with between that conversation between a producer and a retailer, but, you know, I don't know if there's enough pushback from, you know, the producer's standpoint to say, you know, this may be what they're demanding, but this is the impact that it's going to have on sustainability or animal welfare or other aspects that your customers are that they are demanding. And so that's kind of my thoughts on that, Casey, if you have anything to add.
Yeah, I think if we go into, and we're in the home of Walmart, so let's just use Walmart as an example here of where we are based. They have products for all types of buyers. But yet, you know, if you look at the Walmarts of the world, they're still the economic buyer. They're not the Whole Foods, even though they have organic products in their store. And same with Aldi's. They have specialty, higher-end livestock products in their stores. But I've seen it in the stores because I watch people and how they buy meats and pet food. And the people that I've seen and what's on the shelves now is a more economical pet food, which is not even economical. So I think, you know, they're going to be more apt to say, hey, we need to keep our production costs down because our consumers can't afford to buy this. And they still need to meet their certain level of margin on all their products. And so I think that's a dynamic depending on the economic environment we're in. And we can see it from a global perspective, as we can say it's a result of COVID or it's just a natural recession that we're falling into. But I think that drives a lot of things. So I think they're a little more open not to push back. And we can use our other neighbor in Springdale as an example, Tyson Foods. They were really struggling with that label, never ever antibiotics, you know, type label. And they've gone back to using ionophores because they're struggling with enteritis and coccidiosis in their flocks. And they had to make a change that was costing them a lot of money. So when you see some of that happening, that goes into me that, you know, we need to make a certain amount of money to keep supporting our businesses. So we're going to become more relaxed on what we can offer, but you're also not maybe seeing as much pushback from the general consumer as we did in the past because they don't have that extra money now to buy. And so I think we haven't even discussed that. You're still going to have those buyers that are going to buy organic all the time, antibiotic free, but we work with some of those niche producers and they're struggling on the retail side. And I think that's the current economic state, that people don't have extra income to buy the way they feel or the way that it should be raised today. And so I think that changes. That doesn't say that we shouldn't be improving that. We shouldn't be using less antibiotics. We shouldn't be finding alternative animal welfare procedures and not prioritize that. But I think it's that dynamic of the general consumer and who they're selling to.
I love that point, Casey, because I think when we do look at it, and especially the, you know, when a lot of those retailers jumped on some of those claims early on, oh, this will be easy. As you said, Mitch, like, you know, it was a claim that somebody came into the office and said, oh yeah, we can do that, no problem, without necessarily asking backwards down the production chain. But now all of a sudden, as you mentioned, like the economic condition is a reality that's not going away anytime soon. We're going to face it in North America over the next, you know, definitely the short term, if not to the medium term. So, you know, to recognize and have people kind of say, oh, wait a minute, when we did that, it got more expensive and now I can't afford it, when times are tough and money is a little tighter, that, you know, maybe we are heading into an era where maybe we can have some more open conversations, more open dialogue with them to say, okay, you want to do this, that's great, here's some ways to do that, but here's also the cost that goes along with it. Maybe what comes out of it is just more dialogue with them, which is never a bad thing. So,
well, thank you so much. That was a really good interview. And the biggest thing is, let's tell our story and however you're comfortable with it. That's my main takeaways.
I'm excited to have my first co-host podcast on The Real P3. So,
thank you.
Thanks very much, guys.
Well, it definitely was a breath of fresh air to have Andrew Campbell on our podcast. I hope you learned something. And if you'd like to work with Andrew, I suggest that you visit thefreshair.ca to learn more about how he can help you communicate your stories as well. And as always, if you get a chance today, hug a pig for me.